Hello, welcome to the MMQB podcast. I am Gary Gramling from Idaho. We have, as always, Andy Benoit. Alex Abnos on the other side of the glass is what the radio parlance would be, but he's actually on the exact same side of the glass as I am in the SI podcast room. Also, Jeff Irwin, our researcher, not here with us, but always does a great job making us sound smart and informed. Today's going to be part two of our oh-so-special mock draft podcast. We went through picks 1 through 10 last week. And of course, in the interim, we have another trade. Another RG3-ish sized deal going down here, Andy. The Eagles have moved up to number 2. Now, when we did this last week, we had sent Carson Wentz to Los Angeles. You had convinced me that he was not only the better long-term prospect, but the more pro-ready prospect. And Jared Goff, we had penciled into the Browns at 2. It sounds like Jared Goff is going to go to L.A. It sounds like the Rams are in on Goff, and the Eagles are high enough on Wentz that they made the big move up there. If the Eagles miscalculated in some way, it would seem they have made a enormous mistake. But I guess I'll throw it to you one more time, Andy. Tell me about what you think of each of these quarterbacks and their potential fit in Philadelphia with Doug Peterson.
Well, I think I like them both. And as we said last week, I'm not going to throw my arms up if the Rams take Goff first overall. I would be surprised because I think Wentz fits their style of play, their run-balanced offensive approach. Wentz is a better fit for that, but maybe they obviously are going to feel differently because it sounds like Goff's the guy.
Yeah.
I don't believe Philadelphia would trade up to number 2 unless they were fairly positive, almost positive, that Wentz would be available for them, if indeed they like Wentz as much as we've been hearing, and I think they would. So Wentz to Philadelphia makes sense because that's a very well put together offense that they run there, and it's a diverse offense, and it wins through scheme. And why that's important is because Wentz was very good at winning through scheme at North Dakota State, making pre-snap adjustments at the line of scrimmage, calling the run game, calling the protections, all that sort of stuff. That's an offense that you can do that and that Doug Peterson's going to run. So I think it's the right move. I also think Philadelphia probably they must have fallen in love with Wentz just recently because they gave $34 million in guarantees combined for Sam Bradford and Chase Daniels.
They've got a lot of quarterbacks there for a lot of money.
Oh my God, they've got like a whole division worth of quarterbacks now. There's no way they could have known they wanted Wentz that badly at the time that they signed those guys, wouldn't you think?
I would not think so. The only thing I can think of is, Wentz is not going to play this year, or at least not until later in the year.
Well, what will happen? I would be shocked if that happens, because what's going to happen? They're going to get to training camp and find out that Wentz is every bit as ready as Sam Bradford is, because they're both going to be learning a new system. Bradford has NFL experience. I get that. Wentz is pro ready. He's not going to sit on the bench as a rookie. There'd be no point in that. He's ready to play right now. He's like 23 years old. He was in college for 5 years. He's played in national championships at his level.
Yep.
He's not going to sit that first season.
No, that is wild how many arms are going to have in Philadelphia now. So I suppose in the real world, all the clues point towards Jared Goff to the LA Rams and Carson Wentz now going to Philadelphia with the number 2 pick. For our podcast, Mock Draft World, we're going to stick with Wentz with the top pick. Again, we agree that Wentz is the top prospect, and not only that, he's probably a little better fit in the Rams with what they want to do offensively. So we'll stick with Wentz at number 1, and just recapping what we have after that, we have Eagles. We're going to give them Jared Goff at number 2 because clearly they have traded up to get a quarterback, at least we hope. We had the San Diego Chargers taking Joey Bosa. Dallas Cowboys take DeForest Buckner. Jacksonville Jaguars get Jalen Ramsey. The Ravens take Miles Jack. The 49ers take Laremy Tunsil. I should learn how to pronounce that because everyone's been talking about him for a couple months. Cleveland Browns. We are we actually discussed it a little bit off air. We're just going to stick with Vernon Hargreaves there. They can obviously go in just about any direction they want to. Because even, I mean, their best player is probably Joe Thomas. And, you know, all you've heard for the last year and a half is how they wouldn't mind trading Joe Thomas. So that's kind of wide open there. We'll just stick with Vernon Hargreaves. Tampa takes Kevin Dodd, a favorite of both of ours. And the Giants take Laquan Treadwell.
Hey, let's give a little full disclosure and be honest. We're kind of keeping Hargreaves on the Browns for the convenience of just keeping our mock draft intact, so we don't have to redo
a little
bit.
But you know what? We're flexible.
I mean, I don't think they'll go corner. If they do, I don't think it's ridiculous. But they have other needs more pressing than cornerback ahead of Hargreaves. But you know, I get that it's a mock draft, and none of this stuff's going to be precise anyway. In case in point, teams make trades after you do your part one of your mock draft.
I give us more credit than that, Andy. We're flexible enough. We're fluid. We're we can change with the times, and we would have changed that pick if we saw someone we loved for Cleveland there.
All right.
You know, I think it's time for them to move on from the Justin Gilbert era there. It was a wonderful era. It was actually anything but wonderful. And I wonder if people would have nationally. I'm sure all Browns fans know how bad Justin Gilbert has been there. For the past two seasons, but I wonder if Browns fans would be, or I should say national fans would be more, outraged by the really bad play of Justin Gilbert had he not been overshadowed by Johnny Manziel, his fellow first-round pick that year.
Right, good point. Yeah, they're number eight or nine, whatever he was picked. Your high first-round bust was overshadowed by your mid-first-round bust. And so he kind of got off the hook on the media a little bit. But yeah. Justin Gilbert has not gotten on the field. It's not that he hasn't played poorly. It's that he hasn't even played well enough to get an opportunity to play. So and he's missed off-season workouts that people don't know about as well. And he hasn't shown up for everything. And so the effort has also been questioned.
That was Black Thursday in Cleveland. That just did not turn out well at all. But they got Joel Bitonio in that same in that same draft. Speaking of home, you know, we always welcome your thoughts, your questions, angry letters via various avenues. Chris Coleman at Vanilla Jordan reached out on Twitter to criticize a little bit. We said some things about the Cleveland Browns last week that you just can't take back. Just can't be unsaid, can't be unheard. Chris reached out to sort of say, I'll read verbatim what he said. Hard to compare Browns O-line to expansion team level when you have a Hall of Fame left tackle, good left guard, and first-round pick at center. And I allowed for the fact that Joe Thomas is a great player. Joel Bitonio is, I think, somewhere between good and great, which I guess would be very good player. Cameron Irving, I'd actually like to know your thoughts on him. He shifts over to center, and I suppose I should have more of an open mind with him because I think he is a better fit at center than he was at guard last year. I don't know. What do you think of Irving at center? Obviously, he's a year removed from being a first-round pick, even if he was quite a disappointment as a rookie.
He was highly inconsistent, and always remember, when we say inconsistent, that doesn't mean bad. That means he had highs and he had lows, ups and downs. You can see some of the athleticism. I thought he anchored well at times against Bull Rush, but then there were also occasions where he anchored not at all against the Bull Rush. So I don't know what you have there with him. And some of that's it's not necessarily a raw strength issue that could be a factor, but it's a technique issue as well. And his mechanics and playing multiple positions as a rookie probably doesn't help with your technique because the center and guard have such different mechanics anyway. One snaps the ball, the other doesn't, of course.
Yeah.
So Irving's a mystery right now. And mentally, he probably wasn't ready to be on the field. He got forced into the lineup a few times late in the season. The coaches on that team last year, though, who aren't here now, they didn't feel that he was a bust. I think they feel the same way I do, that he's still up in the air and you got to learn about him. So that can slide in either direction.
Okay. No, you know what? And listening to last week's podcast, I think that is a perfectly, as they would say in The Simpsons, cromulent argument by Chris Coleman and a valid point. They might be all right on the O-line. Right side is still a bit shaky, but...
Yeah, no, I think you can say They're good on the left side. If Irving plays well, they're in a good spot. Irving is going to be the swing guy there. John Greco's gotten better in recent years, but he has a low ceiling, and he's reached the ceiling, and he's a plug-and-play guy. Austin Patzer is a liability in pass protection, so the right side of the O-line is going to be an issue, but that's true for a lot of teams in the NFL. I think how Irving plays will decide how the offensive line goes. But the point we were making last week as it pertained to the Browns' bigger picture is they don't have an offensive line you can win with. They're not going to win games because of their offensive line. They're not going to just pound the ball behind the strength of that front five. So, and they need that right now because they don't have skill position players either. So it's still not a good situation overall for Cleveland. And when you don't have skill players, I don't know how this works. But a lot of times your offensive line gets exposed or plays poorly when you don't have threats in the passing game and in the running game.
Yeah, yeah. As always, we welcome your feedback, your questions, your comments, your, again, hate mail. We'll take what we can get. You can reach out to Andy with most of your hate mail. That's at Andy_Benoit. And I am at ggramling_si on Twitter. You can email us, email the MMQB inbox. You can find it on the site. You can tweet at the MMQB account. You can write us a letter. What's wrong with that? It's a dying art. No one does it anymore. Write a letter. Help out your post office. Get some forever stamps. But we enjoy all the feedback. This is a shocker. Most of what we have heard over the past week or two have been from Patriots fans. They're a little bit upset about the not having a first-round draft pick thing. A couple people wrote in saying, are you guys going to go out to 61 so you can mock the Patriots pick? And we're not going to go out to 61, but we'll do a Patriots segment at the end of the next episode, which will be our third episode at the end of the first round here, and we'll mock someone to the Patriots, and we'll go through their team needs, and we'll stand by you Patriots fans out there. We know you feel the commissioner has abandoned you, but Andy Benoit and I have not. But
not at all. I look forward to talking Patriots.
Absolutely. With that, let's move on to part two of the mock draft. When we last mock drafted, the Bears were on the clock with the 11 pick. Andy, give me a little breakdown of what the Bears should be looking for.
Well, some have said they could be in the market for a quarterback. I don't see that happening. I think Jay Cutler had a terrific season last year, and now he's in the same system for the second year in a row. Different coordinator. Dow Logans is now the coordinator. But he's Logans is I think it might go by Loggins. Logans. He and Adam Gase are good friends and have the exact same philosophy. So it's not going to be an issue there. So Jay Cutler played well. A lot of Chicago's biggest problems have been addressed in free agency or by guys getting healthy. Mm-hmm. Let's assume Alshon Jeffery stays healthier, which is a bit of an assumption, but for the sake of the conversation, let's say he does. And they're going to get Kevin White back now, and he was not a factor a year ago because of injury. So now your wide receiver situation's
different. Another one of those teams didn't have their first-round pick last year, just like the Jags.
Yeah, there were a lot of them, relatively speaking, to not have him on the field at all. So he's a totally new presence. You do need to find someone to replace Martellus Bennett. You probably don't do that at pick number 11. But offense, I don't see a lot of issues here. Maybe you take the best offensive lineman available. I don't think Bobby Massey stabilizes the whole O-line, even though he kicks Kyle Long into guard. If there's a good lineman that comes around, a can't-miss offensive tackle, like a Ronnie Stanley, for example, you might just buck up and do that if you're the Bears. Because their other biggest need was defense at inside linebacker, and they signed Trevathan and Jarrell Freeman. So I don't see a lot of bad needs for the Bears. I think they can take the best guy available on either side of the ball.
I'll throw the two probably best players on the board here. We have Ronnie Stanley still on the board, the offensive tackle from Notre Dame, and we have Ezekiel Elliott, who is, I feel like, everyone's favorite player in this draft. And it just comes down to what your, what your stance is on first-round running backs. I think Stanley is the guy here. I don't know if you would object, since I think for this practice you are my boss, you're the GM, I'm some sort of like director of pro personnel or something like that.
So I get to be in charge? That's what you're saying?
Yep.
Well, I would probably take – I don't know where I – with the running back thing, I haven't seen Ezekiel Elliott. I'm not a college scouter. So unless he's special, and I think Todd Gurley was an example of a guy who's special, then you probably don't need to take him in the first round. So Ronnie Stanley, I'm fine with that pick. The other thing, Gary, that they could consider, but maybe the personnel's not there at the top of the draft, is a flexible cornerback, a guy who can play inside or outside, because they'd need to upgrade at the slot corner position. And Tracy Porter was an overachiever last year as an outside corner, but there's a rule in the NFL. You never bank on catching lightning in a bottle twice.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I would. I'm not saying you replace Porter. He deserves to be in the lineup, but I would certainly find someone who could step in if something changed with him. I would find a long term answer at cornerback opposite Kyle Fuller.
All right. Yeah. I really like Mackenzie Alexander, the Clemson corner. He's a little bit smallish though, and I feel like he's a bit of a reach at 11. And I think for our practice here with Stanley on the board, I think the Bears just got to go Stanley here.
Okay.
We're going to give them Ronnie Stanley. And you know, we'll get into this in a later podcast, later in the offseason here, because we'll certainly have plenty of time to fill between now and training camp. But I don't want to set off any hot take alarms, but I think the Bears are going to go to the playoffs this year. Does that shock
really?
You? Are you stunned into silence?
You know, when you see every team every game each week during the NFL season, I don't get shocked by the idea of any team going to the playoffs, really. The difference between the good and bad teams is so thin in the NFL. The Bears were in a lot of close games last season, too. Keep that in mind.
Yeah. No, this is not just a salute to Robert Mays either, but I'll dive deeper into my reasons in another episode, but I think the Bears are a 2016 playoff team. But with that, we'll move on to the 12th pick. We have the New Orleans Saints on the clock. Who should the Saints be looking for?
They need defensive line help. They played, I believe it was 8 different rookies or really young defensive linemen last season. And all but only one of them was taken higher than the 5th round, and several of them were undrafted.
Yeah.
And so they didn't have the guys. I mean, they were searching for answers. They never found a replacement for Junior Gallette. They don't have a true speed rushing presence anywhere. Kikaha is a strong side linebacker. He's not an edge rusher. He might play there, but he's not going to bend the corner and explode to the quarterback. He's an effort type player. And Cameron Jordan's a similar way. So I think if they could find speed off the edge defensively somewhere, that would do a lot to help this defense.
You know, it's funny. I was thinking another guy you know pretty well, Shaq Lawson. He seems like he's in the mold of Kikaha. Did I just say that? I completely butchered that name. But we're just going to move
on
from that.
I'm sure it's happened before. His first name has 3 vowels in a row with an apostrophe separating 2 of them. So it's all right. Kikaha is a high-energy, tenacious player, though. And I get what you're saying about Shaq Lawson. I think Lawson's a little bit more skilled than Kikaha.
Mm-hmm.
But Lawson, to me, reminds me a little bit of Cameron Jordan, another guy who's highly skilled. You know, the more I think about it, it's not a great comparison because Lawson's skilled, but he's not a skilled player. You know what I'm saying? Like he has to improve with his hand placement still and develop some moves. But I think that will be his game and his foundation. And he has a higher ceiling in that regard than Kikaha did. I don't know if he'll ever become Cameron Jordan in terms of skill.
Mm.
But Gary, all what we're talking about and all these guys, skilled defensive ends not good enough to change a defense. You need speed and explosiveness and athleticism and some of that stuff you can't teach. And I'm not sure Lawson's quite that guy. I think he's a better fit in a 3-4 scheme rather than a 4-3 scheme like this.
You know, the other guy who's sort of trending up a little bit as all these edge guys sort of trend up as I don't know, everyone realizes it's a pretty thin draft on the edge. Leonard Floyd from Georgia. Smallish, but long, explosive, flexible. Is he going to fit into what Dennis Allen does? He's, to me, the Georgia guys always kind of scare me because they run a very good 3-4 scheme, but it creates a lot of just easy, you know, sort of outfoxing opponents. It creates a lot of easy sacks for the outside linebackers. And when you look at guys, you know, Jarvis Jones is one guy who stands out as someone who it just hasn't translated to the NFL for him. He's a solid player. He's just not a game changer as a pass rusher, which is what you might have thought he was at Georgia, thanks to that scheme. But a guy like Floyd, you're projecting him a little bit. He's got to add some size. I mean, I think he was some like 6'6", 240 at the combine. Do you take him and just sort of hope you can develop him into sort of that dynamic pass rusher?
You might. Maybe you do. Dennis Allen likes to win through blitz and scheme anyway, so he probably has been a little bit intrigued by teams that take the approach that Georgia sounds like they take. You could do that. The other thing you could do, and I know we gotta jump to pick number, 13, 14 coming up, but the other thing you could do, if there's a corner that you really like, New Orleans got destroyed by poor cornerback play last year, and it was mainly Brandon Browner. Keenan Lewis is back healthy now. P.J. Williams, your third-round picks, you know, he didn't play much last season, but maybe they feel he can become something. Damian Swan wasn't bad in the slot. Delvin Bro was sensational in man coverage. So it's not like they're hurting here, but whenever New Orleans has been bad, it's always been the cornerback that's been involved. So maybe Mickey Loomis, their GM, and Sean Payton say, hey, enough is enough. Let's just get situated at corner so we feel like we can do everything else schematically at least.
All right. In that case, I'm gonna throw we'll cut it down to two names at you. Eli Apple is the long, lengthy press guy, and yeah, Mackenzie Alexander, who's he doesn't have the measurables. I mean, he can run. He's on the smallish side. He's 5'10". I like Alexander just because he's automatically every opponent's least favorite player. He's brash. He's confident. I love that in a defensive back. So I have a bit of a thing for him, I guess you might say. But you're looking at him. You're looking at Eli Apple, who's more of a traditional, big. Yeah. You know, a little bit unpolished, but, you know, he's probably the higher upside guy if you're just looking at the measurables.
I think I'd go in that direction then, because Delvin Bro is 6'1", 193. He's not huge, but I think he could probably cover bigger receivers. So that having that smaller corner, you don't want two small corners. You can't have two little guys, but you can have one. Like what they've done in Denver with Chris Harris, and then Talib takes the bigger receiver in the matchups. You could do that. So I think Alexander is fine with the Saints, but I would take whichever guy they like best. I wouldn't let size dictate it. I'd let whatever – take the highest corner on your board. So whoever's on your board, Gary, put them in.
All right. I'm going to put Mackenzie Alexander in then. Yeah. It's my imaginary world, so let's just do it. Mackenzie Alexander to the Saints. 12th overall, pushes some of these big corners down a little bit, but that's okay. I think Alexander's going to be a player. Brings us to Miami. Originally traded down with the Eagles in the Byron Maxwell deal from 8 to 13. What's Miami looking for?
Even though they traded for Maxwell, they still need a cornerback. Bobby McCain, their fifth-round pick last year, is penciled in at the number two. The other guys have not stayed healthy. Jamar Taylor hasn't stayed healthy, hasn't fully developed, their second round pick of 2013. So they could use a cornerback still. Now the question is, will they feel that way? Because Vance Joseph, their new D coordinator, if he plays the way, it'll be interesting to see if he could go one of two directions. Will he play like Paul Gunther played with the Bengals and do a lot of just cover two and rely on the front seven and the pass rush? He might. They've got Cameron Wake and Dominican Sue and Mario Williams. Or will Joseph play like Mike Zimmer played with the Bengals and try to win with double A-gap stuff and pressures and zone blitzes, which the Dolphins defensive players wanted more of last season? They felt they were too vanilla. We'll learn a lot, because I think the type of corner they get, and either they're going to get a corner somewhere, either first round, second, third round. But if they get a zone type corner, which means they probably got him in the second or third round, then we're going to know what kind of Joseph will be a zone based play caller. But if they want to play like Zimmer plays, then another press corner opposite Maxwell would really serve them well. That would give them two physical press corners on the perimeter.
All right. I kind of like Eli Apple here. I'll just throw one more name out here because I threw him out there 10 minutes ago when we talked about the Bears. Running back. Do they take the running back? Ezekiel Elliott, and to kind of answer your question earlier, he's not Todd Gurley, but, you know, who is? Well, maybe Leonard Fournette next year. Elliott's not Gurley. He's as good as anyone who's come out in the last, let's say, 5 years. I don't have a list in front of me outside of Todd Gurley. He's certainly a better prospect than Melvin Gordon was, who went 16th last year. Elliott's a guy, you know, you leave him in there for three downs. He's, you know, he can catch the ball. He's excellent in pass protection. And, you know, obviously that's a need for the Dolphins now that they've lost Lamar Miller. I don't know if you have a special affinity for your Boise guy, Jay Ajayi. Is that?
Yeah, Ajayi. You know, I like Ajayi. Not because he's from Boise. I actually hadn't heard of him until he got drafted. But yeah. I liked him on film last season. I think he's a good between the tackles runner, and he can do it out of shotgun. He doesn't. It's not just an under center ground game. So I think he's worth 10 to 12 carries a game. And I think Damian Williams is one of the better third pure receiving running backs in the league. Now, not necessarily a third down back. I don't know how he is in pass protection. But as a weapon in the passing game, as a ball handler, he can be sensational at times. And so this tells me if Miami wanted to get a running back later, they could because they've got good complementary players already. And keep in mind, Adam Gase never had great running backs in Denver. He rotated them. He didn't play high drafted guys. Ronnie Hillman sat for them for a few years. So I don't think Gase is my guess is he doesn't believe strongly in running backs. In fact, I know for certain he much would rather throw the ball than run the ball. He doesn't like calling running plays. So I would be surprised if they took a running back high in the draft.
Okay. Well, you know what? Let's give him the cornerback then. Ohio State's Eli Apple goes to the Miami Dolphins with a 13 pick. They'll kind of take it to you a little bit more with the secondary this year. We move out to Oakland with a 14th pick. Oakland Raiders, Reggie McKenzie, another nice offseason or start to the offseason in free agency, really restocking there. What else do they need at this point?
Well, Reggie McKenzie's done a very nice job. I mean, they've got a lot of young guys in the right spots. They have a very good offensive line. They've got their quarterback who can run multiple types of schemes. They have a star receiver. I'm not crazy about Latavius Murray, but he has been productive, so I think they're all set there. So then you look to defense. They felt they had holes at pretty much every spot, all three levels. And some of that's been addressed with re-signing Aldon Smith and bringing in Bruce Irvin. And anytime you get guys like that can also make other guys better because those are explosive difference makers. Those are the edge burner types we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
So maybe their interior D-line they feel can get better just from that. Linebacker's not a great spot for them. They could do that. And then safety, the one we've talked about before, Gary, they signed Reggie Nelson, but they could use another body back there to play safety for them.
Let me ask you about, I don't know if he's necessarily going to go here, but Reggie Ragland, a guy who we actually just ran that piece out this week. You spent a good amount of time with him and broke down some film with him. Is Ragland a three-down linebacker to you? Because he's probably the best, you know, when you think of a middle linebacker, an inside linebacker, he's your thumping inside linebacker, but can he cover?
That's a really good question because I know he believes he can, and he has a right to believe that because Alabama and a lot of their sub packages had him as the guy responsible for covering the back or the tight end. But he would often draw the more challenging, and often that means the tight end. He'd draw the more challenging coverage responsibility, and they would have man and zone principles, whatever it was. Having said that, he didn't play in all of their sub packages either. So they must have felt there were certain limitations in coverage somewhere in there. He would rush the passer as well on some passing downs. And I don't know this is why it's tough for me because I don't know the rest of the college personnel. I don't know the rest of Alabama's personnel. Maybe they felt they didn't have other edge rushers, but chances are they probably – you got to wonder, why was he not asked to cover more and certain third down situations at Alabama? You have to ask the question, and I don't know the answer to that, and Nick Saban would never say that publicly. He would tell coaches in the NFL who called and asked him, he would give them that information most likely. But I don't know on to answer your question, Gary. I'm not going to answer it because I don't know on Ragland. He has the skills. I mean, he has the athleticism, I think. I don't know. I keep scratching my head on that. I hope he can. I liked him. I think he's a good, yeah, smart football player.
We'll table him for a second and come back to him here. But the three defensive linemen I'd throw out to you. You have A'shaun Robinson, who's a favorite of mine. He's another Alabama guy. I don't know if you notice him on tape. I know you spent time with Ragland and you spent time with Jerron Reed. Robinson is a guy, you know, when he flashed, I mean, he had games where he dominated. The LSU game stood out last year. He just wrecked LSU in what was thought to be a competitive game and clearly was not. He does disappear at times, though. You have Sheldon Rankins out of Louisville, smaller defensive tackle, penetrating guy, probably not for everyone, but obviously not to compare the guy to Aaron Donald, who's probably one of the three best defensive players in football. But, you know, a lot of people said, oh, Aaron Donald too small to dominate, and obviously that was not correct. And, you know, we can talk Robert Kemdiche, the boomer bust Ole Miss guy, off the field stuff that, you know, it's going to be up to every team what you want to make of that. But he's obviously, talent-wise, he's as good as any defensive lineman in this draft. So, yeah, those are the three you're looking at, along with Ragland, I would say.
I would think they would go D-line before they went linebacker, in part because Malcolm Smith, their other linebacker, while he's not a star, he is a pretty good cover guy, so he could answer some of the concerns you have. Like, yeah. You can at least ask him to cover. So, yep. So if you've got that figured out, if you don't have a cover linebacker, you've got a problem. But if you got one, then you can live with it. And okay. they play a fairly, I don't want to say they're a basic scheme in Oakland, but they're going to be basic, not because Del Rio will blitz and he likes that stuff, but when he has talented guys, he likes to go very basic. So maybe they do want to stick with that. They've gone with other talented guys. They signed Alden Smith. They signed Irvin, as we said. So sticking along that pattern, maybe they try to just take individual difference makers rather than versatile players. So go D-tackle, sure.
Okay. Let's just go. Let's give him A'shaun Robinson. He's my personal favorite, and you know it'll be up to them to figure it out. I mean, honestly, there's so many good interior defensive linemen in this class that everyone's going to have their own board and their own thoughts on each guy. Yeah. But A'shaun Robinson is a guy I like, so let's plug him in here.
Okay, and, you know, Oakland's decision there will probably come down to how they feel about Mario Edwards, by the way, their second-round pick last year.
Yeah.
He's a defensive end, but I wonder if he could become a tackle with the right kind of training. He's only 280 pounds. They've got a lot of other defensive ends there, but you can't have too many pass rushers either. Yeah. So if they want Robinson, that's fine with me.
Yeah. All right, let's move on. Tennessee Titans finally get to make their pick here, trading down from number one, obviously – piling up all those picks that used to be the LA Rams. What should the Titans be looking for? Obviously, they weren't going to take a quarterback anyway, but, you know, Tunzel, who, you know, everyone thought Tunzel or Ramsey were going to go number one. Obviously, those guys will not be on the board at 15. So what should Tennessee be looking for here?
You could still take the tackle. There were other good tackles in this draft in the middle of the first round. And you'll list them off here in a second. And as we talked about, if you take the tackle and you get one you like and it's a left tackle, then you can move Taylor Lewan to right tackle. Now you've upgraded to that position, and you can move Patousi over to guard, and he needs to be moved inside based on how he looked as a rookie at right tackle. So now you've upgraded your other guard position. Left guard's been a big problem for them in the past few years. And who knows, if you get better at three spots, maybe that's what it takes for Chance Wormack to solidify and get consistent and stay at a high level, which he's shown flashes of, but not consistency there. So if they want to go offensive line, I would be fine with that. A lot of people think they might take a corner. I'd be surprised if they do, because as we've talked about with the Pittsburgh Steelers, who they run that kind of scheme there under Dick LeBeau in Tennessee, they value intelligence and experience at corner more than they do athleticism because of all the matchup zone coverages. Yep. So I don't think they would plug and play a rookie corner. In fact, it might take a guy 2 years to play. And I don't see them using a first-round pick on a two-year developmental prospect. So I would say they go offensive tackle.
Okay. Do you think, I'll follow up with this, do you think Taylor Lewan is long-term left tackle?
I don't know yet. He looked very good as a rookie for what he was, and I think he got put in the lineup. I don't think he started week one. He got put in later in the season. So he showed flashes as a rookie, but he was up and down a little bit in year two, and he did have an injury concern. So I don't know. I think the jury is very much out on him. But if you put him at right tackle, you know, Gary, right tackle is the most problematic position for just about every offense in the NFL.
Yeah.
And if you can have an offense that avoids that problem, that's a great thing for you. And I look back, Lewan had 15 games last year, so his injury, you know, he stayed healthy enough. But I don't know the answer to your question. I don't know if it matters as much as people think either. I think ultimately you need to have protection on both edges of the O-line.
Okay. Well, you know, the two guys I was looking at, you have Ohio State's Taylor Decker, you have Michigan State's Jack Conklin. I prefer Conklin. I think Decker has the better chance of being the superior pass protector when we look back in 5 years. I think Conklin is probably just as good now. And Conklin just he's a tough guy. He's a mauler. He's you know, he just knocks people out with that initial punch. I think they go Conklin here. And I think worst case scenario, there's your right tackle. Lewan stays at left and, you know, figure out from there. But, you know, I think that shores up the edges of that offensive line pretty nicely.
Very good.
We are off to Detroit. Detroit picking 16. Andy, what are they looking for?
Defensive line help. Ziggy Ansah is their only piece really up there.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to be a 4-3 straightforward scheme. They're not, even though Terrell Austin came from Baltimore and he's done a very good job with selected blitz packages, when the Lions have been at their best, it's been when they can just go 4-2 nickel front, let their linebackers play in space and try to win with penetration up front. You need guys to do that. They don't have the guys. So a good defensive end or a D tackle, I think, is where you begin here.
Okay.
Does it feel like we're saying this on every single team this year, defensive end or defensive tackle?
Yeah, a lot of edge. A lot of edge. Defensive tackle, I feel like we're just getting into it with these teams. In the and again, it's a very, very deep draft with defensive tackles. And I feel like now that we're getting into the you know, the teens here, we're getting a lot of teams looking for those defensive tackles. Lions, obviously, I mean, they just did nothing to replace the guys they lost last year on the interior line. I'll ask you about Shaq Lawson again. Do you think he's a fit opposite Ansah? I know he's not the same kind of dynamic athlete.
I think he could fit. I think that would be an okay spot for him. He would be a strong side defensive end. I still think a flex 3-4 system would be good for him.
Okay.
But, well, you know, he could go either way. If they took Shaq Lawson, I think that would make sense. That would be logical to me.
Okay. And as far as the interior guys go, again, you got Sheldon Rankins, who's, you know, undersized relatively. I mean, he's still 6'1", 300 pounds. And you got Kemdiche, the boomer bust guy. You also have Chris Jones, who's another boomer bust guy, who I, you know, I don't know exactly what to make of him. He looks great. He has all the measurables. He just, I don't know. He flashed sometimes and other times he disappeared. I wasn't sure exactly what to make out of him. He's a Mississippi State guy.
You get that a lot with D tackles, by the way.
Remember
Kawan Short? When Kawan Short came in, it was nobody, even the team that drafted him, Carolina, they didn't know what they'd have because his effort was inconsistent on film, and now Kawan Short's probably a top five NFL defensive tackle. But there's been other guys who they looked like that on film in college, and they've gone the other way too.
All right. Well, let's give him one of the defensive tackles then, because I actually want to have another edge player debate with the next pick. So for that purpose, let's give him one of the guys. Do you go?
I'm sure that's exactly how Bob Quinn will look at it, the Lions GM. He'll take into consideration, what can I do to help the Falcons out at number 17?
Absolutely. Well, I think he'll look at it as, what can I do to help out the MMQB podcast and make sure their talking points line up nicely with the show. I don't know, Sheldon Rankins? Do you want to give him Sheldon Rankins, the disruptive, penetrating, somewhat undersized three technique?
Sure. Are we talking Detroit still?
Detroit.
Yeah, sure. I'm fine with that.
Let's do that. Sheldon Rankins of Louisville goes to Detroit. We are going to come right back. We have four more picks to go. Falcons, Colts, Bills, and Jets. The NFL draft is coming up fast, and SI has a new miniseries that takes you deeper than any big board. Listen to Draft Season, where each pick is a player and each player has a story. The latest episode features former Penn State quarterback Christian Hackenberg and his experience convincing teams that he can be the face of their franchise. Find Draft Season on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, or at si.com/draftseason. Christian Hackenberg, he's an interesting guy. Jenny Vrentis did a good piece on him. He's as polarizing a quarterback prospect as I can remember coming out in the last couple years.
Yeah, I don't know anything about him. I get asked about him a lot, though.
Yeah.
Why? What made you think to say that about him right now? Because of the ad?
He was just in the ad read.
But you're not thinking Atlanta's good. I had a dream that the Falcons drafted a quarterback a few nights ago, and so now I've been all crisscrossed on it.
No, I'm a pro Hackenberg guy. We're actually going to have Jenny Vrentis, some of the other MMQB folks, along with Andy, coming for a show next week, and we'll talk a little Hackenberg with her because she certainly knows him well. But we'll move on here. Just a quick recap. We have the Bears taking Ronnie Stanley. Saints take Mackenzie Alexander. Dolphins go with a cornerback, Eli Apple. Oakland takes A'shaun Robinson. The Titans go with Jack Conklin, the tackle from Michigan State. And Detroit gets a defensive tackle in Sheldon Rankins. Brings us to Atlanta with a 17 pick. What are the Falcons looking for, Andy?
Well, can we say defensive end again? Are we allowed to do that? I mean, their pass rush was horrible last year.
And I wanted to touch on these two guys. Leonard Floyd, I talked about a little bit earlier. He's a little more of a projection. He's a Georgia guy, which always worries me just a little bit with the edge guys, because they do play in a very outside linebacker, rush linebacker friendly system. And Shaq Lawson, the guy you know, is the other guy. And Shaq Lawson seems a bit polarizing. I'd like your general thoughts on him. Is it a lack of flexibility with him? He has the power. I should cite this specifically, but I won't because I didn't pull it up. Someone reported a team put him through an explosiveness test, whatever their explosiveness test is. And, he tested through the roof on that. What's the hesitation with Shaq Lawson?
Well, and I like that we talk about it like that, because that's what it is. It's hesitation. No one's saying the guy can't play. I think he can play. And I liked him on film. And I only saw him a few games, because the ones that I studied with him, he was injured in, and he was still highly productive in that national championship. The concern with him is, can he bend the edge? In the NFL, you've got to be able to dip and get around the corner as an edge rusher. You can't just win with bull rushes and effort. You're going to get six sacks a year that way. You know, you're just a guy. You've got to bend the edge, be able to dip low and play on a swivel, be an athlete. And Lawson hasn't necessarily shown he can do that. And then the other concern is he technically sound enough? Because if you can't bend the edge, then you've got to have a repertoire of pass rushing moves, and he's really he hasn't played a lot in college, and it shows he's not totally developed in that regard. So he's we're talking about a guy with perhaps limited upside who needs development, and I think that's what's going to give some teams pause. Now that'll be some teams. If you look at like Atlanta, that's going to give Atlanta pause about Shaq Lawson because they look for guys that can win on their own. They look for guys who can create. They don't do a lot of blitzing and they're going to beat you with finesse up front on passing downs and play 4-3 zone. Buffalo, who's coming up later, and I've seen some teams project Shaq Lawson there, that he could fit there. I mean, they ask different things out of their pass rushers. They're not a bend-the-edge type of team on every down. So I don't know, but there are going to be some teams that are high on Lawson and some that are low on Lawson. I bet he ranks anywhere from 10 to 40 on a lot of different draft boards.
Yeah. You know, they have Vic Beasley as sort of their dynamic edge guy.
And he's still a project, by the way. He's by no means – I mean, he could go either direction because he's another – and he came out of Clemson just like Lawson. He's another one that's underdeveloped. He has a very limited pass rushing repertoire at this point. And he got better late in the season last year, so that's encouraging. But I don't think they're making a draft selection with the idea that, hey, Vic Beasley is our Khalil Mack. We're set at one of the spots. Yeah. I think they might feel they could take two defensive ends over the next couple years.
Do you like Leonard Floyd there then as sort of the more dynamic player between he and Shaq Lawson? But, you know, you're running some of the same risk you run with Vic Beasley. And again, these edge guys, the pure edge guys like Floyd, they get pushed up a little bit. They're just aren't. You're not going to get one in the second round, or the guy you're going to get is going to be such a project that you're not going to be able to get him on the field anytime soon.
Yeah, you know, one thing that occurs to me, Gary, where Beasley could work for Atlanta, they don't necessarily need a base defensive end. Tyson Jackson's not bad there, and Adrian Claiborne's. And I said Beasley. I mean Lawson. Where Lawson could work.
Yeah.
Jackson's a good base defensive end for them, but if they could find a three technique pass rusher, a guy that could slide inside, kind of like what Michael Bennett's done for Seattle, then that's a solution as well. Cause they are okay at D tackle, but Hageman's inconsistent. Babineau's getting older.
Mm-hmm.
And if they feel Lawson could be a three tech, which he did at times in Clemson. And I think there are some people who think he projects better as a three technique than a defensive end. Then maybe they go with that idea and think we can develop them there.
Interesting. Do you like the value there at 17?
I think value gets a little bit overrated. Let's not complicate the draft. If you've got a need and there's a guy there that fills the need, take him at 17. Oh, you could have got him at 25. Well, we're not picking at 25. We've got the 17th pick, and once game day comes around and Sundays are here, coaches and people in front offices, they don't think, hey, we wish we'd gotten that guy a little later. Maybe we could have gotten an extra fourth round pick out of it. It's about filling needs and having guys that can do what you do with your scheme. So if Lawson works, I think you take Lawson. Value, that's, whatever.
That's fair enough. That's why you are the boss in this situation. Let's do it then. Let's give Shaq Lawson to the Atlanta Falcons. They go with a Clemson edge / defensive lineman guy for a second straight year here. I'd be very interested to see Shaq Lawson as a three technique at times.
You know,
in the next couple of years. Moving on, Indianapolis Colts. What are the Colts looking for?
Offensive line help, big time. Big time. This is an easy one. Interior offensive line. Andrew Luck got destroyed last season because defenses figured out that Hugh Thornton and Collin Holmes, the Colts guard and center, could not move laterally very well. And so what teams would do is they would stunt at them, and that means loop defensive ends around, crisscross blitzes, things that force those guys to play on the balls of their feet and then adjust going left and right real quickly. They were horrible at it. Luck, who has a tendency to hold the ball, and I know they're going to coach that out of him, he's still going to do that in third down and 12, though. He might get more efficient on first and 10 passes, second and 7, but Andrew Luck is programmed to extend the play, and so he will play with guys rushing right up in his face. So it's on the offensive line to prevent that. The quarterback's not going to protect himself. We need someone that will. They don't have any interior lineman that can protect him right now.
So I'll throw three names at you. You have Cody Whitehair. Both these first two guys are collegiate tackles. Cody Whitehair from Kansas State. Most people consider him to be the top interior line prospect. LaRaven Clark from Texas Tech, who is big upside. No one knows. It's always tough to project the Texas Tech guys because they play the air radius system. In college football, and you know, a lot of those Big 12 offenses, it's just tough to project what they're gonna be. A lot of people think he's a very high upside tackle. Some people think he fits better inside. He's 6'5", 316, so he's tall. He's big enough to, you know, long enough to play tackle. The other guy is Joshua Garnett, who pure guard, power blocker, and he's from Stanford. And can the Colts, you know, can they resist another Stanford guy in that organization? So those are the three guys out there. I think Whitehair is probably your safest pick. Well, Garnett's probably just as safe as Whitehair. Clark gives you the option of being able to kick him outside down the line if you wanted to.
I think you take the safest pick because you're going to need that guy to play right away at either left guard, center, or right guard. They shuffle those players around in Indianapolis because they haven't found an answer anywhere. Their first-round rookie, if it's an interior lineman, will be a starter at one of those spots. So I think you go safest, most immediately ready guy.
Okay. Let's give him Cody Whitehair then. Cody Whitehair, the guard from Kansas State, goes to the Colts.
Let me ask you, so are you writing these down or something as we do it? Because you keep saying,
I thought you were.
And then you reiterate it. Are you like, it sounds like you're writing this down or putting it up on a board or something. Are you
I thought you were, Andy. Yeah, I am. I just have a spreadsheet on my computer.
So you're typing it in.
Yeah, yeah. I'm typing very softly, though, so that the mic does not pick it up. That's it's a little radio tip I learned over the first couple of shows.
Yeah. I thought that was my typing the first few shows.
No, I think that was me slamming on the keyboard. Like, I don't know. Who has a keyboardist anymore?
I've been told I typed too loudly. I got a laptop that the keys were really sensitive, and so I had to strike them harder because if you struck them just barely, they'd type out like 10 letters in a row. And so I developed a very aggressive typing demeanor. And I thought for sure I used my laptop for this. So I thought for sure that was me a few weeks ago.
I thought it was
glad
me.
To hear it wasn't.
Maybe it was you. Either way, if you were on the edge of whether you were going to listen to us or not again because you thought there was like a drum line in the background, I promise I learned how to type softer.
All right. I haven't. So keep rolling the dice. But I get it. That's good of you.
We're getting there.
It's good you're tracking this too. It's good you're tracking.
We're improving. Let's go to Buffalo. Soft spot in my heart. The Bills, I'll just ask you flat out. You know, the buzz now is, Bills are really interested in Paxton Lynch. They seem to really like both the coaching staff and the locker room. I get the sense that they really like Tyrod Taylor. So I don't know how much stock to put into that. Should they be looking quarterback?
I think if the right one is available, then yes. They would be comfortable with Tyrod Taylor starting again this season. I think they would. So it's not a dire need, and I would go somewhere else. If we're talking first-round mock draft projecting, I would go somewhere else other than quarterback if I'm Buffalo.
Okay. Let's talk elsewhere then.
Who's the most dynamic, just general front seven player left? And that can mean linebacker or defensive end or D tackle, preferably linebacker or a stand-up player, an outside linebacker, an inside backer, an edge guy. Who's the best one left?
Leonard Floyd.
Then I think that's who you take.
Okay. I just want to ask you about Raglan again really quick. It seemed like there was a lot of pushback with Rex in his system last year, which was, you know, it's more, and you can correct me if I'm wrong at any point, it's much more complicated than what they ran under Jim Schwartz. And I think that was a big turnoff for a lot of guys. I'm not sure they had the, you know, like they used to have Jim Leonard out there and for the Jets who would sort of quarterback the whole defense and make the calls and get everyone where they're supposed to be lined up. I don't know if they had that guy last year capable of doing that in Rex's system. Is that something they should be interested in? Do you think that was an issue?
Well, clearly there was some issue because they got worse in every – I'm not a stats guy, but when a team gets markedly worse in every major statistical category, that gets your attention, especially when it's Buffalo, because we know for sure Rex Ryan cares about that stuff. You and I have both heard him talk about it, Gary.
Yep.
So, they've got a problem now. Let's not get carried away either. Rex has run a good scheme for a lot of years, and if he has the corners who can cover, then he's shown that he can win with – pretty average guys up the middle of the defense, even though they ask a lot of them, he can win with those guys. He's got the corners in Buffalo. Ronald Darby was sensational as a rookie. I think Stephon Gilmore's an excellent cover guy. They've got safeties who can play man-to-man. Aaron Williams and Corey Graham are both former corners themselves. They've got a nickel guy in Nickell Roby. So they've got the secondary is tremendous, assuming everyone's healthy. So that's why I say take the best front seven guy available, because you need a versatile, movable piece there. You don't have to fill a specific need, because this is not Jim Schwartz's scheme where everything's the same from snap to snap, and therefore the responsibilities are more defined. Guys have to be versatile and flexible in Buffalo. So now, having said that, one thing to keep in mind, and versatility is more important than football IQ when you play for Rex Ryan. That might seem counterintuitive because it looks complex, but it's the illusion. The complexity is in the design, not in the execution.
Yeah.
So the Bills, they don't do a lot of different things, Gary. They do the same things, but with just different players doing those things. So it looks like a lot more is going on than there really is. That's called cross-training. You cross-train at multiple positions. So
okay.
That's why I say you go versatility, and you can play young guys in that scheme and get away with it. And I think whoever's most versatile is the best fit for them.
All right, let's do it. Let's pencil in Leonard Floyd.
Well, type him in, you mean.
Which I will type him into my spreadsheet on my laptop. I typed him very softly. He's already in there. I already typed him. During that rant, I had already dropped him in there. All right, Bills get Leonard Floyd, brings us to the New York Jets. Everyone's still flustered by the Fitzpatrick situation here in New York.
Which is interesting with Hoyer, by the way, now. That got very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, and the other thing is, I don't know, you've got Bryce Petty as a developmental guy. I mean, are you going to take a second developmental guy? I don't buy them being linked to any quarterbacks at this point.
I don't foresee that. I don't foresee them doing that. Yeah.
Yeah. But what should they be looking for?
Assuming they get Hoyer, who I think that's who's going to be their QB, or Fitzpatrick, they're going to get some quarterback for about $5 million a year. And Fitzpatrick, I guess, wants $8 million right now, and that's hence your unemployment. Assuming they get one of those guys, then the focus shifts probably to the other side of the ball. Boy, with the Jets, it's an issue. They're almost like the Bills in that the front seven versatility is key. Todd Bowles believes in pressuring up the middle of the defense. So in Arizona, they never had a great edge rusher, and a lot of people thought that was a problem. And to some degree, it was. That's why they traded for Chandler Jones this past year. But they was never as big a deal as people thought, because Bowles wins through interior blitzes, not straight pass rushes. So he wants length. He wants long-armed guys, tall guys, big athletes who can obstruct the quarterback's vision while they're blitzing him up the middle. Are there any guys worth a first-round pick like that in this draft?
Then they were heartbroken that Leonard Floyd did not continue to tumble down the draft board to them.
All right.
Probably, you know, if you're looking at outside guys, you got Kyler Fackrell, who I personally like him. Nobody seems to think he's a first-round pick, or they think he's very borderline. Other than that, you're looking at guys, you're looking at more sideline to sideline guys, you know, Darren Lee from Ohio State, Sua Cravens, who's a safety / linebacker from USC. Raglan is another guy. You know, I know Raglan played
that's
this.
The one. I think that's the one that makes the most sense.
Who? Cravens?
Raglan.
Raglan? Yeah.
Because
yeah, I mean,
even though it doesn't quite fit what I just said about the versatile and here's how they blitz, but the other part of it is you want a hunt and chase linebacker.
Yeah.
And really, Gary, Raglan could make a lot of sense for Buffalo, because what Buffalo, not to go backwards here, but what Buffalo believes in is they don't do gap control and any of that stuff up front. They tell their D linemen to kick the crap out of the opponent and let the linebackers go hunt the ball down from there. They say if you penetrate up front, the linebackers will always figure it out. So that's yeah. the responsibility. So a run and chase linebacker would do real well in Buffalo. And I think Todd Bowles, he's a little different. He will use gap control stuff, but it's in they do a lot of two gapping and condensed fronts that plug up the middle of the line and let their linebackers run. Both of these teams need sideline to sideline linebackers, and neither of them really have it. The Jets have David Harris, but that's it. So I don't think Raglan gets past 20.
Okay. And I'm going to ask you one more thing about Raglan, because and again, go read Andy's piece. It's up on the MMQB.com. A lot of interesting stuff. One thing I was really surprised by, because, you know, I watch Alabama, but I didn't watch them closely enough, apparently. Raglan played essentially defensive end in some passing situations. He played with his hand in the dirt as a pure pass rusher. What did you think of him in that role?
I don't see him doing that in the NFL. He might do it once in a while, but I don't think he's got what you quite look for in that. He's okay at it, but okay. In the NFL, you need your best doing that on third down. He's not that kind of pass rusher.
Okay. Well, we're gonna.
He could be a good blitzer, though. He could, if you schemed it for him, I think he'd be an excellent blitzer. I just don't see him as a wide nine technique guy at any point.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we're gonna give Reggie Raglan to the New York Jets. Recapping 11 through 20 very quickly. Bears take Ronnie Stanley. Saints go Mackenzie Alexander. Dolphins select Eli Apple. Raiders take A'shaun Robinson. Titans get Jack Conklin. Lions get Sheldon Rankins. Falcons Shaq Lawson. Colts go Cody Whitehair. Bills go Leonard Floyd. Jets go Reggie Raglan. We're going to come back next week, do 21 through 31. We'll actually come back a little bit early next week to do 21 through 31, so we do it before the draft happens. And Patriots fans, stop harassing us. We promise we will address the Patriots' needs, and we will take a wild guess at who they will get late second round. Thank you to everyone. Thank you to Andy Benoit. Thank you to Alex Abnos, our producer. Thank you to Jeff Irwin, our researcher. He was Andy Benoit. I was Gary Gramling. Come back, join us again this week or next week on the MMQB podcast.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.